The month of June has been hijacked by the anti-Christian culture to show their pride in something God calls an abomination. When you support AFR, you help us continue to stand for godly values and provide the resources for you to stay in the know about the enemy's tactics. To say thank you for your gift this month, we'll give you the booklet, Inside the LGBTQ Push of the 1990s, to help strengthen your convictions. Just go to afr.net/offers. afr.net/offers.
Welcome to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve, Senior Pastor of First Baptist Church in Texarkana, Texas. Now, here's Pastor Jeff.
Well, good morning and welcome to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I wanted to read to you from 1 Timothy chapter 3. Paul says to Timothy, "It is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do." And then he gives the list of qualifications for an overseer, for a pastor. He must be above reproach, the husband of one wife, temperate, prudent, respectable, hospitable, able to teach. That's a big one. Not addicted to wine or pugnacious. That means he's not always wanting to fight. But gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? And not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must have a good reputation with those outside the church, so that he will not fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Well, we want to talk today about the challenges of the pastorate. And I've asked my newest staff member, Dr. David Holder, to join me today. And Dr. David Holder has worked with pastors for a number of years, and he's been a pastor himself for a long time. And he's had his ministry starting out as a young guy in his 20s. The Lord called him, and so he has lots of experience and seen lots of things in different churches and walked with pastors through difficult times. And so, David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Pastor Jeff. Great to be here.
And David has such a great radio voice. And, you know, they talk about it, you have a face for radio.
Right.
David's a sharp-looking guy, but does have that deep, resonant voice. Okay, so, David, when we talk about the challenges of the pastorate, lots of times people have this perception that, you've heard it many times, well, you guys only work one day a week.
One day a week.
Well, what an easy job.
Right. And I like to tell them, follow me around. You know,
yeah.
Because you just see the top of the plant. The roots are down deep, and you don't see the labor, the work, the prayers, and the phone calls and all that it takes to get there. Yeah, that one day a week, that 1 hour a week, I wish it were true.
Yes, it's definitely not true. And I remember when my father-in-law was a pastor, and when I got called into the ministry, he would tell me, Jeff, what you see on Sunday, is that's not the whole ball of wax. You know, that's kind of the... That's the game, but you don't see the practice. You know, you come watch the team play and you think, well, that's all there is. You just play on Sunday and that's it.
I've come to believe that a lot of younger or men who are not in pastorates think that that's all there is to it. You know, I get up there and get to preach and get to share. People listen to me and tell me how great I am or whatever, and they forget or they don't understand that there's that other 6 days a week you have to work too.
Well, you know this very well in your last position as an associational missionary working with 37 churches and 37 pastors. A lot of guys are dropping out.
Exactly. One of the statistics, and I researched this, said about 1,200 a month, and a fellow named Mark Dance, who's done some research for Lifeway, says that's really not true. He's saying about 250 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, that's a lot of people.
Right.
And in my work, I've discovered it happens a lot on Monday morning. You get
yeah.
a call, and, you know, I didn't have a good day yesterday, and I think I want to quit. And, you know, just try to get them through Monday, and things can look better on Tuesday.
Right. Well, and I have a heart for guys that are in smaller towns. I had a seminary professor, he called that the one horse church.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the horse.
Mm-hmm.
And the church expects you to do everything, and that's a lot harder in my opinion. I've always been on larger staffs, But if you're the lone guy and you have a part-time secretary or a part-time worship person, man, you have to wear a lot of hats, and that can really wear you out.
Well, I had a seminary professor say one time, you can tell the size of a pastor's church by how many keys are on his keychain. The more keys he has, the smaller the church.
Yes.
And you're right. They end up mowing grass, picking up trash. I know pastors right now. They're mopping floors. They're taking out the trash. They're doing things that other people could do or do at other churches.
Well, I have a friend, Brad Witt, pastor of Abilene Baptist Church, and he had a post not too long ago on X, and he called it this, 5 hard things nobody tells you about being a pastor. Brad says they'll tell you how to craft a sermon, lead a staff, moderate a business meeting, which I don't remember learning that in seminary.
No.
That's kind of an important skill, but they don't really teach that. Teach you about Greek and Hebrew, but very few will tell you about the pressure and pain that often comes with the calling. Not to discourage you, but to prepare and encourage you. So he says, and I want to go through some of these, David, in our time today, but you'll bleed in the same places you bless. And what he means by that, you'll love deeply, pray passionately, invest personally, and sometimes get betrayed profoundly.
I've gone through that. I'm sure you have. People that you have, I call it going to the mat for. You've gone out of your way to minister to them, try to help them, and the first thing you know, they're at another church, or it's like, what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts. I mean, you really poured out your life. I got into a conflict one time in the church, and we came very close to leaving. And I remember meeting with another pastor, and he was talking about a family that they had a baby born in the hospital, and there were some issues. He went, helped them get through that. He even got them a place to go after it was all over, you know, kind of a retreat. And he said the first time that something happened, they were on him, you know, they just, mm-hmm. And he said something I've never forgotten. He says, in a conflict like that, relationships are more important than truth. You know, the word got it, something mm-hmm. happened, the people didn't
yes.
like him, and they joined the crowd. You know, it wasn't about whether or not it was true. It's
right.
my friend thinks this, so I'm standing with my friends.
That's exactly right. I've experienced that. And, you know, I think churches in smaller towns where you have a lot of family mm-hmm. and family relationships in the church, you know, in a bigger city, you have less of that. And especially a bigger church, you know, 10 disgruntled people in a large church can't foment a lot of, you know, rebellion, so to speak. Not that they're doing that, but, you know, their gripes don't go near as loud as far as somebody that's, if you have 150 people and you have 10 people in the church that are upset with you over something, they can make a lot of noise and they can make life pretty difficult. And I think too, David, as pastors, you know, one person says something that's cutting or negative, or they're upset about this or that. It's weird how that really sticks. 10 people can praise you and encourage you, but that one person, man, you're thinking about that for hours, for days. Why do you think that is?
Well, I heard someone say one time that it takes 9 positive affirmations to overcome 1 negative. Maybe it's more than that. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is pastors want people to like them. You know, mm-hmm. we want to be thought of and respected well, and sometimes it doesn't go that way. As a pastor, one of the things that tended to hurt me more, if I might not have been that great a preacher sometimes, didn't preach that great of sermons, but if I felt like somebody felt like I let them down, you know, I had a need and you weren't there, even though I couldn't do everything, it still hurt me because
mm-hmm.
I wanted to have that S on my chest, super mm-hmm. pastor, you
right,
know,
right,
and
right.
you're just ready to go any time. And when somebody criticizes you, it just strikes at the heart of who you are
mm-hmm.
and your identity, and that can hurt. And you have to realize I can't do everything, but even so, one of the things we're talking about here are expectations. People expect you to be on call 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
You get a call from somebody or they see you in the grocery store, well, I know you're busy, but,
mm-hmm.
and here we go. We
right.
have a counseling session right there in the grocery store.
Yeah. I told the staff Wednesday, Ada Ferguson, who's in heaven now, she was our counselor, and she would have people come up to her at church and they'd start, you know, wanting to have a counseling session right there in the hallway or whatever. And she was very gracious and loving, but she was firm. And she'd be like, well, now is not the time for that, but you can call my office and we can schedule, because I can't give you the time that's needed for this. And so you're not mean, but you're setting those boundaries. And I think pastors probably have a harder time setting boundaries than maybe other, like a counselor or
I was thinking that very word, boundaries. It's boundaries with our family, boundaries with our time. Now, this is not the best time for us to discuss that, or I've got a family. And I admit there's been times over my life when I probably put ministry ahead of family, and the family suffered because of it, and that's not a good thing. You can ask pastor's children, you know, dad wasn't there, or he was gone a lot, and we didn't have I didn't get to know him as well, or he wasn't there when I needed him, or when things happened. I appreciate the other day I heard you and Debbie talking, and she said something that stuck with me. She said, you know, Jeff, we never felt like you weren't there for us with raising your family. And I know with a ministry like yours, that's not easy to do. The time demands that, hey, here's my family, here's a ministry. You know, one of the things about being a pastor and being in what I did, serving 35 churches instead of just one, you know, I had one church with its event. We're having this party, and, well, pastor, you know, you don't have to come, but we wanted you to know. And I know what they're saying, right? And so there's 35 churches saying things like that. Well, we have this event, and you could be somewhere every night.
Right.
When there's one church, it's busy enough, but that many. And then if, you know, or if somebody's in the hospital, you know, you don't have to come, but I want you to know I'm having surgery, and I know what that means too. And then, well, man, I'm trying to go out of town tomorrow, and what do I do? And, you know, you have to balance those demands.
You really do. I think too, David, I had a seminary professor, a guy that was profound in my life, Dr. Wayne McDill, and he was my preaching professor. And he would tell us, he said, listen, guys, the most important thing you do is on Sunday morning preaching the word, because you're hitting the most people. And he said, what some guys end up doing, if they're not getting much affirmation with their preaching, they do tend to get a lot of affirmation with their hospital visits and their bereavement visits and things like, oh, Pastor so-and-so is so wonderful. He sat with me through this surgery, and it was 3 hours or 4 hours or whatever. And some guys gravitate toward that because they get all the accolades and the pats on the back, and maybe they don't get as much of that with the sermon. And Dr. McDill said, but you have to remember, that's, you're dealing with one family or two or three people as opposed to your whole congregation. And if you spend so much time at the hospital or on these visits, you only have so much time. And he said he had seen over the years that those guys tended, their study time got less and less and less. And then their sermons were not very good because they didn't spend the time. And so I think it's important to keep that balance.
Well, I can think of my father-in-law. He was well-known in the community as a pastor. He liked to hunt. And there were times when he would end up in the ER in his camo, got called out of the woods to go and visit. And my wife, one of his daughters, said, you know, there was a time they were getting ready to go on vacation. Loaded the car up, headed out, got a call. Somebody had died. So they didn't go on vacation. They stayed so he could do the funeral. And that's always been a worry of mine in the smaller church. You know, I get ready to go out of town. Okay, I hope nobody dies.
Right. Yeah, it is a big deal. So Debbie's dad was a pastor, and he did that. He was, you know, in that era, he's been gone now 20 years, but, you know, that back then, decades ago, that was kind of expected for a pastor, and you were going to be there at any time a member was in the hospital. You were going to be there, and he didn't have a lot of extra staff, so it was him. And Debbie would say that, she said, we were getting ready to go on vacation, and somebody would die, and he couldn't go. And so she said, you know, I just grew up kind of with my dad not really being there, and that really it can create resentment in the heart of a child. Toward the ministry.
Well, there have been wives who say, well, my husband's mistress is the church.
Right.
You know, he puts more attention and time in that than our own family. And I think I heard on your program of a pastor who got a phone call from his wife.
That's Ken Hemphill.
Yeah, that was Kim Hemphill's story. We've got a family in crisis, we have need, it's your family, you know,
right?
Wake up.
yeah our marriage is in trouble. This marriage is in trouble. Whose marriage? Ours. And he said it was like getting hit in the head with a baseball bat. It's like, whoa. Because he just, I mean, he wanted the church to go well, and he was pouring it. And you know, you think about that, and it's like, well, that's not necessarily a bad desire, but it's out of balance.
It is.
And it's out of whack. And so if you're out there listening and you're a pastor, or maybe a bivocational pastor, and you find yourself being stretched so thin, you know, it's good to to sit down and really reflect, what am I doing? What are the things that God has called me to do? What am I doing that's taking up a lot of time that maybe somebody else could do, a deacon in the church or another staff member? And how much time am I really giving to my wife and my kids? Because that is critical. As Adrian Rogers used to say, the church is Jesus' bride, it's not mine. My bride is at home, and I need to take care of my bride. Well, you're listening to Real Truth for Today. Pastor Jeff Shreve here with my friend Dr. David Holder, and we're talking about the challenges of the pastorate. Do pastors really only work one day a week? Is it an easy gig? We'll be back right after the break.
This is Real Truth for Today. Podcasts of the program are available on the podcast page at afr.net. Now, back to Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff here. I have Dr. David Holder in the studio with me, and David is our newest staff member. He officially starts July 1st in our discipleship ministry office. He's going to be the discipleship pastor and oversee our Sunday school teachers and various aspects of the church and help me with preaching and other things. David is he's a seasoned pastor, so he's able to wear a lot of hats, and I appreciate that about him. But we're talking about the challenges of the pastorate. 1 Timothy chapter 3, it is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, of bishop, of pastor, it is a fine work he desires to do, a noble work. But David, it's not an easy work.
No, not at all. And from the outside, it may look like glamour and, you know, I get to stand in that pulpit and preach, but there's the day-to-day stuff of just dealing with people. And a lot of pastors get frustrated with that. One of the things I found out in the research was the stress levels are very, very high. Mm-hmm. The expectations people have of you, the glass house syndrome, which is one of the things mm-hmm. here. Everybody knows about your family. I remember after my first wife passed, and it wasn't too long after that, I began to see another lady whose husband had died. And then I had that, a pastor has a girlfriend,
yes.
You know. And I felt like, people, you need to tell us what's going on. And I think, why can't I have a life? Why right. do I have to tell you what? And I finally did. You know, one right. Sunday morning, I just said, I turn off the camera and I'm going to tell you what's going on. And once we got that over with, it was okay.
Yes. Yeah, that can create a lot of buzz. I know, you know, Ed Young Sr., he's really not a senior, Edwin Young. Mm-hmm. We call him junior and senior. But, you know, when his wife died after 40-something years, I think, of marriage, then he married his secretary, who is 20 years younger or so than he is. And he was in his 80s, I think, when he married her. And that created quite a buzz. And, you know, people start, it's almost like they want to think badly
right,
about
exactly.
this person. And so, yeah, it's difficult for sure. You know, the idea that it's an easy job, that's what people say from the outside looking in, because they don't see the other things. And I remember hearing Adrian Rogers say this one time, David. He said, the ministry is a wonderful calling, but it's a terrible profession. Mm-hmm. And then he unpacked that a little bit, and he said, you have to be called by God to do this, because if you just do it because you think it's an easy job, it will chew you up and spit you out. You know, I think in today's world, it seems like we're downplaying the call a lot today, but the call is really important.
That's been a big part of my ministry as associational missionary, calling out the called. And I still feel called to do that with some folks who are coming to church here who feel called to ministry. Because if it weren't for that call, that moment in my life when I could look back and say, this is where God spoke to me and said, I want you to serve me in full-time service, I would have quit a long time ago. And the times mm-hmm. that I think of it like a stake in the ground. You know, I can go back to that, mm-hmm. and every time I feel discouraged or wanting to quit, God puts his arm around me. It's like he does that and says, okay, remember that, son, mm-hmm. right back there? Yeah, yes, sir. Okay, that's all that need to be said. You've got to have that call.
Right. I had a seminary professor say one time to our class, and he said, you know you're really called when you throw in the towel to quit and God throws it back.
I mean,
you can't quit.
No.
You're called to do this. You know, it's the Lord saying to Isaiah, whom shall I send and who will go for us? And here I am, send me. I wanted to be in the ministry. for a long time, even when I was in college, but I knew that I had to be called to that because it couldn't just be something cooked up in my own mind and my own heart. And so, you know, sometimes a call, it may be difficult to discern, is this really from the Lord or is this just something I want to do? And I think those kind of go hand in hand, don't you?
I do too. I do too. You've got to have both of them. I was thinking while you were speaking of one of my heroes, John Bassanio, and he talked about how he wrote names in his Bible of other men that who went into ministry, I don't know, 20 or 25.
Yeah, I think it was 25.
After a few years, only two or three names still there.
Yeah.
And whether they had a call or not, I went to college with guys whose mama called them. You know, mama thought it'd be a good thing, and so, but they're not in it anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to have that word from God. God put me here. And even in times when the church life can get difficult, you know, feel like God called me here and I'm going to stay until God calls me away.
Mm-hmm. Well, how about this one? So we were talking about some things that Pastor Brad Witt, Dr. Brad Witt said, five hard things nobody tells you about being a pastor. So you'll bleed in the same places you bless, and people that you minister to, sometimes they'll turn on you and you don't understand why. Second thing he talks about, your family will live in a glass house. Let's talk about that a little bit, David, because it's not fair to the family. It's not fair to the kids if they feel like, well, Dad's a pastor, so if I'm not perfect, then I'm disappointing the family.
I was just telling a story last night to a person about how at a church I served one time, my son, my oldest son, if he acted up, I heard about it. You know, there might be 10 other kids acting up, but Pastor, your son did that. You know, it was like he was supposed to be a special child as opposed to the other kids' kids, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting in Scripture. I've preached before on David as a dad. David wasn't a good dad. Mm-hmm. He's a man after God's own heart. He's a great king, but he had too many wives with too many children, and they couldn't, you know, if you have that many, you can't get around to all of them. You only have so much bandwidth. But Samuel, with his two sons, they were, the people said they're worthless. And so it's like, it's hard for me sometimes to wrap my mind around how these guys can be so godly and yet they don't do a good job at home.
Could it be he was so busy doing ministry that he forgot his first ministry with his own sons, his own family?
Yeah.
There's something in that passage about Samuel's sons that said he did not restrain them when he didn't discipline them.
Yeah, I think that was Eli.
Eli
with Hophni and Phinehas. He didn't. Yeah. He was a bad dad too and paid the price. It doesn't really say much about Samuel as a dad other than his sons were not, they didn't walk in the
worthless
ways.
Worthless men, yes.
Yeah. So it's a challenge to all of us. I had mentioned at the break, David, about mutual friend Charles Lowry, and Charles's dad was a pastor. Charles and Fred were both pastors, and Fred was pastor at First Baptist Bossier for many, many years. Dear friend, he and his wife Lee. But Charles saw his dad kind of get chewed up and spit out by some churches, and he just determined, I'm not going to let that happen. You know, if right or wrong, but it's kind of like, hey, if they start really giving me the business, I'm going to go somewhere else
and find better pastures, so to speak, is what you're saying.
Well, it's just like, hey, I saw my dad just sweat blood for these people, and it wasn't appreciated. So he said, I think his dad was too much. It's kind of like what we were talking about in the first segment. He was too much, it's all about the church, and his family got the leftovers. And then his kids saw that the church didn't necessarily treat him very well, and they got a little jaded about that.
Well, one thing I tried to do with both of my sons is that would happen with them. They might see things happen. There are people who were, you know, surprise hypocrites in the church, and they would point that out, or something wouldn't happen the way they thought it should, or I'd get mistreated. But I would say this, son, because you're my son, there are certain things you've gotten to do, places you've gotten to go that you wouldn't have done. You know, we get invited on trips, Pastor, how about your son going with us? That might be a privilege he would get that some other child may not get,
right?
If you know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say, here's some privileges too, as along
yeah,
with
keep
those
that in balance.
I tried to. I don't know if it always worked, but churches can be so cruel.
Yeah.
I heard of a pastor who was fired by his church. The treasurer brought him his final check and said, well, here's your final check, but I went ahead and took your tithe out of it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that really happened.
How nice.
Yeah, how nice.
Well, I think it's important for pastors to shield their kids as much as they can, to not bring home the underbelly of the church. People have said over the years they like to come to church, but they don't want to know too much about it because, I mean, church is people. And I like what was said about Howard Hendricks. He trained all these pastors at Dallas Theological Seminary. And somebody said, well, a pastor is a shepherd. Why aren't you a shepherd? He said, I don't like the smell of sheep. he wanted to train shepherds, right. But he said that tongue in cheek. But you do. You see people in some of their worst moments. And I've always just kind of taken that and just said, okay, well, people are people, And just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you can't get in the flesh and be mean and be rude and lose your temper and say things. You just got to roll with the punches and just say, okay, well, I turn that person over to the Lord, let them deal with them. But not less necessarily internalize it. What have I done wrong? How am I, a guy that's missing the boat or an insufficient pastor? We're all insufficient. We just have to trust the Lord and do the best job we can do under His strength.
Who is adequate for these things? Not a one of us. It's an incredible calling. It's thrilling. You preach a sermon and people come forward to give their lives to Christ. People respond to your ministry. They appreciate what you do. And then again, there's the other side of that where things don't go well. And it's like I've told football coaches, especially, I said, I was going to write a book one day on how our jobs are similar. Right. If the team's not winning, you fire the coach, right?
Right.
And you can bring in a new coach, you bring in a new staff. One of the things I thought was very important, I would tell my staff, I said, we may get behind closed doors and the fur flies, but we're going to walk out of here arm in arm.
Mm-hmm.
The devil can take things like that and divide us and keep us down, and we've got to be united. That's so important because the devil's at work.
Mm-hmm.
He's trying to destroy churches, and I know with some very prominent ministers, their reputations have been destroyed, their ministry's gone. It's tragic.
Well, we have seen that, and the Robert Morris thing is like a whole different category, having that in his past where he's a sexual predator, mm-hmm. of a child. That's way different than a pastor that falls prey to sexual immorality with a member of his church or something like that. Obviously, both are terrible and they're disqualifying. But let's talk a little bit about that, David, because as a pastor, I know as a pastor, we're still people. And just because we can preach a passage and we can point things out, and as Brad says, you'll preach for faith while wrestling with doubt. Well, you may be struggling with your own marriage. You may be struggling with lust, with greed, with insecurity, with worry, with a host of things. And you're fighting that, but, nobody is batting 1,000 when it comes to fighting temptation. Sometimes we get overcome too. And then how are we supposed to stand up to preach?
That's a great challenge. I was thinking about this. This is number 3, I think, on our list.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember in seminary that we had a guest preacher, and there was a question and answer time after chapel. And one of the students asked a question that I still think is interesting. He said, have you ever had a moment in your ministry when you got up to preach and you felt like you didn't have a word from God? Mm-hmm. It was just one of those weeks where it was just dry wells.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if so, what did you do? And said, man, how many times, we've had, the Saturday night specials, I'm sure, have come up. I mm-hmm. think you're much more prepared than that. But, some guys wait till Saturday night. In fact, the sermon websites, the number one access time is Saturday night. Number 2 is Sunday morning.
Really?
Yes. I read that statistic a while back. And so, do you have a word from God? And then there's that confessional preaching where some preachers say, well, here I am struggling with this. And you hear the pastor and you think, man, he's worse than I am.
Right.
There's got to be some honesty.
Right.
But at the same time, you don't have to be perfect to preach God's word. You say, we all struggle.
Right.
We all have our temptations. And I admit that. And I try to put boundaries in my life to keep that from happening. But just because you can't, none of us are perfect. We can't preach perfection from the pulpit, but it is, there are times when you have your own struggles and you have your doubts and you're,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes I guess preaching can be like a therapy. You're out there saying, mm-hmm. here's the stress, and you're kind of preaching to yourself is what I guess I'm trying to say.
Right. Well, how David says of him, he encouraged himself in the Lord when his mm-hmm. his guys were turning on him because they made a raid while he was out with his men and they took the wives and the children and all their possessions. and they were thinking of stoning David because they were so distraught. And it says, and David encouraged himself in the Lord. I think that's very important for Christians in general, but especially for pastors. You have to be able to do that, and you have to have an associational missionary or some pastor friends that you can talk to. And typically it's better if it's somebody outside the church that you can talk to. And another pastor understands what you're going or facing better than just another guy in the church.
That's part of my role as associational missionary. I think of myself, I had thought of myself as a pastor to pastor. Where does the pastor go when he's discouraged or when he's had needs questions answered, needs help? He's the only one in the church without a pastor. So who, and there's nothing like another pastor to put his arm around. And that's why I've tried to encourage my pastors. Let's get together and talk. One of the best pastors gathering we ever had, I hosted it one time when I was pastoring in Louisiana. We didn't have an agenda. We just had a meal. And then somehow we got started on a funny thing happened in church. You know, I was trying to do a baptism and this went wrong. And we just had the best laugh. Nobody would have understood that except another pastor. You know, things going wrong in church.
You're right. Well, one of the things, too, Brad Witt brings up, it's really, really true. Success will be harder to measure than you think. And sometimes, you know, we think we have a sermon and then we give an invitation and nobody comes.
Nobody comes.
And you're just like, I can't preach my heart out any better than that. And this passage is really, you know, I've been preaching on the second coming of Jesus from the Olivet Discourse, Matthew 24 and 25, and really laying it out there. Listen, if you're not ready, you're going to get left behind. And once the Matthew 25, the parable of the 10 virgins, once the door is shut, that's it. And you would think that people in a crowd that we have, no doubt there are lots of lost people there. And some have said to me, well, that must just break your heart when you don't see people come. And I said, well, but I can't make them come. The Lord's got to work on their hearts. Adrian used to say, I can preach truth, but only the Holy Spirit can impart truth. So I don't take that personally if people don't respond. I was faithful to do what God called me to do.
I think that's the key. I was faithful to do what God said. I did my part. The rest is up to the Holy Spirit.
Well, we're talking to Dr. David Holder. He's in the studio today. He's our newest staff member, discipleship pastor, and we're talking about the challenges of the pastorate. When we come back from the break, we'll open the phone lines 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. If you have a question or comment, we would love to hear from you, so give us a call and let's talk. As we celebrate the many pro-life victories going forth, we rejoice. Preborn's network of clinics have a unique opportunity to advance even further without political persecution. What does this look like? Preborn is the greatest threat to the abortion industry. By rescuing, on average, 200 babies' lives a day, Preborn is putting a serious dent into the abortion holocaust. But there are still thousands of babies who are slain daily, and Preborn's goal is to rescue all of them. With the help of the pro-life community, meaning you, we can save so many more. Please join us in saving all those precious lives. The ultrasound is the game changer. Once a mother hears that precious heartbeat, she is twice as likely to choose life. If you consider yourself pro-life, we need your help. One ultrasound is just $28. Five ultrasounds are $140. $5,000 sponsors ultrasounds for the entire preborn week for an entire day. How many lives can you save? Every child is a beautiful gift from God, so please join the cause. To donate securely, please dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
If you'd like to contact Pastor Jeff, email pastorjeff@fromhisheart.org. Now, back to Real Truth for Today with Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Welcome back to the program. Pastor Jeff Shreve here. I'm sitting across the table from Dr. David Holder, the discipleship pastor at First Baptist Texarkana. Brand new. He starts July 1st, so we're getting him going a little bit before his hire date. And he served as associational missionary on the Arkansas side of Texarkana for the last 4 years. And so David's had done a lot of work with pastors and pastored various churches in his ministry. And so he knows very well the difficulties and struggles and challenges of being a pastor. And that's what we've been talking about, because it's not what it may look like on Sunday morning. Obviously, Sunday morning is a big part of the pastorate, but Monday through Saturday is a big part also. And in this segment, we'll open the phone line to take your calls, 888-589-8840. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. And we have Steve on the line from Texas. Steve, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Hey, appreciate you taking my call.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So kind of a comment slash question. Just want to get your thoughts on this. So I go to a church here, pretty large church. Our pastor is probably one of the hardest working guys I've ever met. Just a phenomenal dude. Though I do wonder sometimes if we're operating just here in America kind of in a different kind of capacity than what was outlaid and outlined in the Bible in the New Testament. And I just wonder, would it be something like when Jethro came to Moses and was like, hey, man, you've got all these people under your authority right now. You need to divide this up. And so in the church, even when we look at like the qualifications for overseers, elders, and deacons, if you have a church of 5,000, what about of those 5,000, maybe divide it up where you have maybe 50 leaders, and then of those 50 leaders, you have, 10 overseers or something like that, and then that way it doesn't all fall on one pastor essentially just heading up the entire church. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's biblical? Do you think we've kind of gotten away from that? I just want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it's very biblical. And one of the things David's going to be doing, working with our Sunday school teachers, the way our church is set up is we want to get people in a class because that's going to be their main source of community. I tell people this all the time. If you just come to church, you're a face in a crowd of 1,500 people. It's hard to get to know folks. But when you get into a class with your age and stage of life, you can get to know a lot of folks, and then our Sunday school teachers become pastors of that class.
I think too that the pastor has to be willing to give away that ministry. I've heard pastors say, if you get a visit from this person, it's a visit from me. Mm-hmm. And you're willing to let people serve and not you don't have to have your hands everything. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that about you. That's how I see my job. Let the Sunday school classes do their work. I've heard of pastors, they would go to the hospital and say, what are you doing here? My Sunday school classes come, my friends have come, and that was a good thing. He's trained them to be there for those people and to care for them. Like the caller is saying, like Jethro's did his advice.
Yeah. Cause he told Moses, say, you're going to kill yourself trying to do all this. And I think that's a good word to pastors, Steve, is that you can't do it all, and you do have good people in the church. That's the point of deacons. Acts chapter 6, if you look at it that way, either they were the first staff members or the first deacons, but they were there to help the apostles because the apostles couldn't do it all, and it was taking them away from prayer and the ministry of the word, which is their main function, to lead and feed the staff or the flock. So I appreciate it, Steve. Great insight there. Anything else to add?
No, I mean, and what do you think about, one more thing I want to add. What about the idea of everybody have to go to seminary? Because I don't see that in the Bible, and I think sometimes that becomes a prerequisite for if you feel like you are being called. If the pastor wants to look for people that are in the church that they can elect as overseers or elders. But, if you don't have a seminary degree, then, maybe that's something you can put on the radar and you can work to attain that. But does that disqualify you at that point? In many churches, I think it kind of unfortunately does. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think to be the pastor of the church, David has shared the same thing that was shared with me. A call to preach is a call to prepare. And I think you can have guys in the church that are not necessarily called to preach, but they're called to be Aaron and Hur and hold up the arms of the pastor and minister in different ways that would be visiting the sick and helping out and in the serving of the daily meals, as it talks about in Acts chapter 6. But those guys need to be trained up to a point, but everybody, we all need to grow. So, David, what would you say to that?
I wouldn't say that. It depends on some churches set their different criteria for ministry, but no, you don't have to have a seminary degree to care. Just have a heart for people, and that's what I look for in a church. Okay, here's a person with the gift of encouragement or the gift of compassion, and I want them to assign other people to help and serve them. And some positions do require education. I would never discourage any pastor, any leader, from a layperson from getting some education, because to me, it just sharpens your sword, and you can be more effective in ministry. But to say that you can't serve without a degree, well, that's not true. That's not true.
No, and there's so many things online now, Steve, that can help a pastor. And I'm not talking about just downloading sermons, but one of the things I love to do, David, is to listen to Q&As. And John MacArthur has a whole ton of Q&As where people are just peppering him with questions, and to see how he responds to those, and you can really build your theology. Now, I'm not a Calvinist, so I don't abide by all his election thoughts, but he does a really good job backing up what he believes by what does the scripture say, and we all need to grow and handle accurately the word of truth. So good word, Steve. I appreciate you calling in today. We have Tony on the line from Texas. Tony, welcome to Real Truth for Today.
Oh, thank you. I just wanted to say that I believe that I'm an elder of my church, and I believe an elder and deacon, as well as pastor, should be a called position from God, just because that the politics in church, if you're not called by God and seeking God, like you said, it will chew you up. Because there have been plenty of times that, you know, I'll be getting to thinking that I'm throwing in a towel. I don't want to take this. I don't want to handle this. And before the towel hits the floor, it's back in my face.
Yes. Yeah, I definitely agree when it comes to that position. So when it says the office of overseer, that's an episkopos. That's a person that has oversight. We get episcopal from that. Episkopos, but you know, the pastor is the shepherd. 1 Peter chapter 5 talks about shepherd the flock of God among you, and how you do that, you do it gently. You know, it says in Isaiah about the Lord, he shall lead his flock like a shepherd. He shall gather the lambs in his arms and carry them in his bosom, and shall gently lead those who are with young. And David, you've seen, and I've seen, pastors that are overbearing. They seem to like to be combative. That the scripture says you can't be like that.
Right.
You have
right.
to be gentle toward people, and that can be a real challenge.
Well, I think that's exactly right. They feel like that. Well, I haven't preached until I've skinned my people, you know, and people come out bruised and bleeding. But part of our ministry is to help heal the sheep. You know, we may afflict wounds because we're telling them the truth, but there's also a time to heal as well. And that's so important in ministry. A healer. Jesus was a healer. He told them the truth, and he did inflict people with spiritual wounds, so to speak. But he was also a shepherd who helped them and come back to restoration.
Yeah. So we agree with you, Tony, that it's incumbent upon the pastor especially. He has to be called. Now, I don't think that a deacon necessarily is a guy that has a call in the ministry as a full-time gig. So that's a little different. But he has to be called to support the pastor, support the unity of the church. You know, one of the things in our bylaws is that the office of deacon, you can't be a deacon unless you're supportive of the church and the ministry of the church. If you have problems with the direction of the church, well, you need to bring those up to the pastor, but it would be unwise for the church to have you in a position of leadership, because if you're going to be on the team, you got to be all in.
Some of the best men I ever knew, Pastor, are deacons who held my hands up, who stood beside me. I'll never forget a deacons meeting one time. There was a difficult issue. They asked me what I thought, and I told them, and one of the deacons said, "Is that what you think, Pastor?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I'm for it." And then, boy, you talk about, I better get this right, because this man's going to follow me down a hole if I have to,
right.
If I go there.
Right.
So it really made me stay on my toes.
Right. And I think, too, Tony, that you have, you know, we're not all going to agree on every fine point of theology. We need to agree on the essentials of theology. If we're not in agreement on the gospel, that's a deal breaker. But you can have guys in fellowship that maybe one believes 5 points of Calvinism and one believes 2 points of Calvinism. Maybe one believes in a pre-tribulation rapture and one believes in a post-tribulation rapture. I think the post-tribulation rapturist is wrong, but that's not a deal breaker for fellowship. And so we have to be able to, in essentials, unity; in non-essentials,
liberty.
Yeah, and in all things, charity. So we treat people with love. So anything else, Tony?
Just want to say, me and my pastor will go into a locker room, and we'll have our discussion. But when we come back out. When we come out of that room, we're arm in arm, one mind, one accord, and I'm holding my pastor up and saying, let's get this done.
Amen. That's a good word. Well, thank you for calling in today, and I appreciate your ministry and your support there for that pastor. David, let me share this passage. 2 Timothy chapter 2, beginning in verse 24. The Lord's bondservant, his doulos, must not be quarrelsome, but be kind to all, able to teach, patient when wronged, with gentleness correcting those who are in opposition, if perhaps God may grant them repentance leading to the knowledge of the truth, and they may come to their senses and escape from the snare of the devil, having been held captive by him to do his will. I think it's important for pastors to remember we need to be patient when wronged.
Exactly. And people watch how we walk through those kinds of things, like through controversy. I've been there, and somebody would say, well, Pastor, I watched how you still love the people who were your critics. You pray for them, and it shows them this is how we do it. Even though we may be hurting ourselves, we walk through this situation trying to model the role of patience and forgiveness and let God work on their hearts, and that's not easy.
Okay, so a mutual friend of ours, Dr. Paige Patterson, and Paige, I don't know very many people that have been more misjudged and aligned maligned than Dr. P, but he told me, he said when people would write bad things about him or something like that, he would send them a gift, and he said, I would buy a tie for these different ones that would write articles about him. This was some years ago, and he said one of those guys was wearing that tie one day, and somebody come in and said, that's a nice tie, where'd you get it? He goes, well, Paige Patterson bought me this tie. And Paige said that doing that helped him not be bitter toward that guy for maligning him. And I think it's tough for pastors to sometimes ward off the bitterness.
I think Spurgeon had a situation where somebody sent him a letter, and there was just one word on it. It said "fool," and he said, "I've gotten unsigned letters before, but I've never got one that was signed but no letter."
Yeah, and so people can be in. I had a time where people were very upset with me, and they would send letters, and I got to where I'd give it to my secretary, and I said, read this, and if it didn't have a return address on it, so it wasn't, it was anonymous, I said, do I need to read that? And she'd said no, and because it's just going to be negative, it was just going to slam me about different things. If you don't sign your name to it, I'm not going to really put much stock in that. And I realize people want to unload, and they don't want you to put them in a category of the enemy camp. And so I get why people do anonymous letters. But the bottom line is, if we're going to deal with Matthew 18, you have something against your brother, you need to go to him and talk it out. And if you can't come to a resolution, you can't come to a resolution. But
I gave that counsel just a few days ago. Okay, here's a person that has some issues with a pastor. You need to sit down with him and be honest. This is what I've seen, and what can we do about it? And not fester over it. Get it out of your system, because every time that person saw the pastor, they thought this situation. And you're right. Matthew 18 is a very good go. If you have something against your brother, you go to them. And if they won't hear you, take somebody else. And then if they won't hear you, you know, it goes before the church. And if that doesn't work, then they're like an outsider. But there's a definite process. And we don't often follow Matthew 18.
No.
Sometimes churches, you know, they get a group, you know, or you have a business meeting and you see people there you hadn't seen in years. You say, uh-oh, what's going to happen here? And that's how we do it sometimes.
Yeah. Well, and there are issues that that can be resolved. Sometimes it's just personal preference. You know, people get upset about music and things like that. And I mean, I have preferences with music I like too. And so we have to be able to look past the personal preferences. If it's a serious doctrinal issue, the pastor's preaching heresy, you need to go to him. You need to call him out. And you probably don't need to stay there. But you don't have to be disagreeable in your disagreements. You don't have to be mean and rude and cutting. And we're called to be loving in all things. Well, you've been listening to Real Truth for today. David, thank you for being my guest today.
My pleasure, Pastor. Thank you.
Yeah, we've been talking about the challenges of the pastorate. Maybe you want to share this program with somebody. You can share it on YouTube or Facebook or go to AFR.net, Real Truth for Today. And as we always say, go out today, shine for Christ, and share what great things the Lord has done for you, and know that God will use you as His witness. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.